Article 6 is capital contributions. The question is, how much money, how much property are you putting into the deal, and what does that buy you in ownership of this company? And on the flip side, it also controls what happens if you take money out of the LLC. The first section, 6.1, shows the ownership of each one of the members based upon their capital contributions. And in theory, both John and Joseph have put in an equal amount of money, so it's a 50-50 deal. One of them could have actually put up money, the other one could have done all the work, and we still could have had a 50-50 deal. As I said earlier, the one that did the work may have to pay income tax on the value of the stock or the membership interests that he's getting, but he can do that and get a 50-50 cut. And it's not unusual to have a silent financing partner and then the active partner who actually does the business. 50-50 is always a problem. It's just plain hard to deal with. I've seen 50-50 partners in an LLC or a corporation in years of litigation. The operating agreement or the bylaws are written so that there has to be a unanimous vote. Well, we ain't getting a unanimous vote. Now what do we do? Well, you sue each other to death. If in any way you think that there might be a divorce between you and your business partner, and that could be a figurative divorce or a literal divorce, then you need to make sure that your deal isn't a 50-50 deal. You need to at least give somebody a 1% so that they can break a tie between the two of you. And by the way, there's a little note here. If one of the 50-50 partners happens to lose their interest because they get sued, a creditor gets their interest somehow. And yeah, I know they have to get the charging order, but if you do get my interest and we're 50-50 partners, you might note that the court will usually assign a 51% interest to the creditor so that you don't have the control over your company anymore. If the court's going to go far enough to take the interest away from one of the members, they're going to make sure that that member now controls if this is a 50-50 deal. So you might just put that in the back of your mind and try and prevent a 50-50. Let's have a third person in there somehow. The next section is 6.2, allocation of profits and losses. You might note that this is one of those where you've got two choices. In the first choice, we're going to divide everything up based upon the percentage interest as shown in the capital contributions. In the second one, the allocation of profits and losses is going to be made by the managers based upon their discretion. That's okay. As long as it's me and Sweetie or Hubby, then we're fine. We can divide up profits and losses as we wish. However, if you've got a bunch of partners, you may not trust them all, or if there's a possibility that you're going to get into trouble, then you want it so that the allocation has to be based upon percentage of capital contributions. That way, there's no weasel room. And by the way, I'd probably, if it were me and Hubby and Sweetie, pick the second one. And then if it looked like I was going to get into trouble, I would go back and amend my operating agreement so that it was the first one, based upon percentage. Can you see how we can do some damage control if you actually get into trouble, and yet we can have a lot of flexibility during the good years of your LLC, and hopefully all of your years in the LLC are good years. But we've got to have a contingency plan to take care of a problem if one arises. And by the way, the flexibility of being able to allocate profits and losses is a big deal because you can move money to family members who need help in a period when they need help, even though they don't own a great chunk of the LLC. That's going to depend upon how the LLC is taxed, but you can get a great deal of flexibility by combining the ability of the manager to distribute stuff and having the proper taxation structure. This is all discussed in Course 3 of the LLC Wizard. 6.3 says that the members can require additional capital contributions. Now, each member is going to make an equal contribution based upon their percentage interest, so the percentages aren't going to increase or decrease. However, if one of the members doesn't make the contribution, then the other members are going to have the right to stand in on a pro rata basis, make contributions, and their percentage interest could go up relative to the defaulting or the non-contributing partner's interest. 6.4, 5, and 6 are basically housekeeping provisions that say that the members can't just demand their money back and they don't have any claim on the company's property. They're members, they're owners. They don't have claim on the company's property. 6.7 basically says that the most that a member can lose is what he's got invested in the deal. That's provided, of course, that all of the formalities have been followed and everything's okay and they can't pierce the corporate shield and so on and so forth. But we're going to assume that you've done it all right. 6.8 says if the deal does blow up, then all of the members are going to stand in line as equals to get any of the spoils that are left over in the company. 6.9 talks about the distribution of profits. And we hope that there are just a ton of profits in your little LLC. However, the facts are most companies are not profitable. So the downside terms of the operating agreement are usually more important than the upside terms of the operating agreement. Because if there's lots of money, everybody's happy. If there's no money, then we've got people who are not happy. That's when you get sued. That's when you have the problems. Note that the net operating profits are defined in this section, and the members are going to get a distribution dividend for tax purposes. But the manager can determine whether or not any money is actually paid out of the LLC to the members. He can retain profits for the reasonable needs of the company. Now, this is a really important clause in the charging order protection that we've been talking about. Because in theory, in charging order protection, the manager is still going to be the manager. And in this situation, he can declare profits, which means you get to pay tax, and yet no money is actually distributed out of the company in order to allow you to pay the tax. That becomes a very uncomfortable position for members to be in, particularly for someone who has a charging order against a member's interest. We're not going to go into that in great detail now, but this becomes very important in protection of the company if one of the members gets in trouble. 6.10 says that the LLC is a pass-through entity for tax purposes. And that's going to be true in all cases except if you choose to have your LLC taxed as a C corporation. Then it's not going to be a pass-through entity. So obviously you're going to have to take this clause out if you want it taxed as a C corporation. But like 90% of the LLCs are not taxed as C corporations. They're taxed as a sole proprietor, partnership, S corp, some other way. And in fact, in 6.11, we're saying that we're going to have this one taxed as an S corporation. Now, just because you say it in your operating agreement doesn't mean you don't have to file all the forms with the IRS. You still have to file the forms with the IRS. Now, obviously, if you're going to have your LLC taxed as something other than an S corporation, this clause is going to have to come out as well. Now, if your accountant is in on the decision of how your LLC is going to be taxed, that's great. But make him justify why he is having it taxed the way he says he wants it taxed. You need the information to do that so he just doesn't get a free pass, because I see a lot of people who are very sad and they come to me and they say, well, our accountant said we needed to do this, and the accountant was just flat out wrong. The tax forms specifically get a little tricky if you're trying to interface your company with your living revocable trust. Your living revocable trust should actually own the interests in the LLC, so your family doesn't have to probate the company after you die. Your company may well be your largest asset at the time you die. And if it's tied up in probate for years, the company's going to go under. It's going to go down, guys. So we have to prevent that. Companies are actually the biggest probate mess. You've got to structure the ownership of your company to keep the company out of probate when you die. And by the way, if you're taxing your LLC as a subchapter S corporation, then you have to have a special type of living revocable trust. It's called a subchapter S qualified trust. And that trust is going to own the membership interests or the stock in the LLC or the actual S corporation. If you don't have a sub S qualified trust, then the IRS is going to come back in and set aside your tax election. You're going to be taxed as a CE corporation, and that's really going to screw things up. Article 7 is the capital accounts. That's basically your bank account in the company. You put money in and you get membership interests or stock back, but that gives you a capital account or a bank account with the company. And you're going to have a specific balance based upon how much you've put in. The basic concept is when you take money out, the account goes down. When you put money in, the account goes up. And we're getting into the accounting stuff, not the legal stuff. So I'm not going to go through this in great detail, but everything needs to be written down in your operating agreement so that the CPA can look at it and say, okay, this is what we need to do. Remember the case where the father was dying? They finally found the operating agreement at the CPA's office. The guy's going to want to read this section. 7.1 talks about the accounts. Your account's going to increase each year by the amount of profit that the company keeps, or at least your allocated share of that profit, and it's going to decrease if the company has losses. If the company makes a distribution or pays a dividend, you might note that your account's going to go down if you get a distribution. You've taken money out of the company. Now, if everybody gets the same distribution, pro rata, based upon their interest, then the capital accounts basically all stay equal and we're pretty happy. It's when one guy starts getting a bunch of distributions, his account's going to fall through the bottom of the floor, and the other guy's account's going to be still up there nice and healthy. Well, accounting-wise, everything's got to add up in the end. So if you get way out of whack in your capital accounts, the accountant's going to have a tizzy fit because things aren't working out right. And you might note, if the company is making a distribution, most of the statutes say that the distributions have to be made in like kind to the members. So if you've got $50,000 in cash and $50,000 in property, you can't just usually give one guy the cash and the other guy the property. They have to get equal portions, or at least pro rata portions, based upon their interest and based upon the amount of money and the amount of property. 7.2 says that basically we're going to determine our profits and losses based upon the way the IRS wants us to do that, general accounting principles. 7.3 talks about liquidation of the company, and the distribution or the profit and loss is going to be made based upon the members' respective percentage interests in the company. But note that the member doesn't get anything until the other liabilities of the company have been satisfied. This is why you might want to make a loan to the company and not simply buy more membership interests if the company needs more money. The problem always is when you're liquidating the company, people are going to try and get their share early. Well, we're going to try and address that by saying that possible distributions can be used to offset anything the guy's gotten that he shouldn't have gotten. 7.4 says that if one guy has gotten all of these distributions and the account is way out of whack, well, we're still not going to make him repay anything in order to try and balance out the capital accounts. If you've got a member who wants to withdraw some of his money from the capital account, I mean, he wants to back out of the deal, basically, that's going to be in the discretion of the manager. And if anything happens like that, he's only going to get cash. He can't take property away from the company. And like I said, capital accounts are basically the domain of the accountants, not the lawyers. So leave this all to your accountant, but it needs to be written down in the operating agreement. Article 8 is the books, records, and accounting. This is kind of the mundane stuff, so we'll go through it pretty quickly here. And it's pretty self-explanatory. The accounting year is going to be January 1 through December 31, unless you are taxed as a C corporation, and then you could have a fiscal year that wasn't the calendar year. But everybody else has to have the calendar year. All small companies basically are on a cash accounting system. We're just saying that that's the case in 8.2. The managers are going to keep certain books. Now, this is part of the formalities that need to be followed. You need to keep the books. But you might note that there isn't anything in there that has to be kept that really isn't very easy to do, so you can do it. The managers are going to do an annual statement, basically the checking account, but hey, you've got to do all of that in order to figure the taxes anyway. The tax return is going to show the profit and loss, and obviously the members get to look at the books. 8.5 is kind of a cheat section. It says, hey, members, if you don't pipe up and say something, we're going to deem you as having approved all of this stuff. So the members, if they've got a complaint, they need to speak up within the 60-day, or you could have a different time period there, but within the time period set. Article 9 is dissolution or termination of the company, and this gets really sticky sometimes because there's never enough liquidation to go around to liquidate. 9.1 just lists a number of reasons why the company would be dissolved, and you can read those. They're easy. You can dissolve it upon the written authorization of the members. That's easy. Or in E there, you just kind of have the company die. But I would do it on the written authorization of the members. That's the best way to do it. If the company dies because the term runs out, you can always renew the term if that's what you want to do and maintain the company, and you never miss a beat. So it's no big deal. 9.2, winding up liquidation and distribution of the assets of the company, is largely controlled by state law. The state has a real interest in who gets what first, which one of the creditors gets paid. So the managers are directed to wind up the company, they liquidate the assets, they allocate profit and losses, they of course pay off all the bills, the liabilities of the company. Note that it says including liabilities to members who are creditors. That gets paid back before D, the remaining assets go to the members in accordance with their respective percentage interests. And, of course, in the bottom of Section D there, we talk about what happens if there isn't enough money to pay everybody off according to their capital accounts. Article 10 is the miscellaneous junk, and it's not particularly junk. In fact, I've seen a lot of court cases be won or lost dependent upon what's in this catch-all provision section. 10.1 is one of those choice sections. You get to choose A or B. And in the first one, the difference is the operating agreement can be amended by a majority interest. In the second one, it has to be amended by a unanimous vote of the members. In both cases, if you're going to change the percentage interests of the members, then you need a unanimous vote. Many of the states will require a majority vote to amend the operating agreement. Go ahead. I would use the unanimous version. If the state statute overrides it, so be it. But in the second version that requires the unanimous approval, that's going to make it harder for a creditor to come in and change things if one of the members gets in trouble. In 10.2, the members agree that they're going to execute whatever additional pieces of paper, instruments, need to be executed in order to make the company move forward. 10.3 is construction. It's one of those stupid clauses. If we've called the members in the operating agreement and there's really only one member, hey, we don't care. If we've called him a him instead of a her, we don't care. Headings, the little headings in each one of the sections, they don't mean anything for legal interpretation of the document. Waivers says that if you forgive them one time for doing something wrong, next time they do the same thing wrong, the fact that you didn't do anything the first time does not waive your right to do something in the second situation. Rights and remedies, you have the ability to sue and get an injunction, stop somebody from doing something. You can sue and get money. You have all of the rights and remedies available to you. You can use one after the other in trying to protect your rights against the LLC. Now, you're not going to need that. This is your LLC. But it's in there anyway, and it's a good thing to have. Severability is important. Basically, what it says is if one provision of the operating agreement becomes bad law, or we screwed up, or anything else happens, well, that's okay. We're going to keep the rest of the operating agreement in full force and effect. Heirs, successors, and assigns, yep, this all applies to your heirs if you were to die. We're going to try and beef up the asset protection a little bit by saying that none of the provisions in the operating agreement are going to be for the benefit or the use of the company's creditors. And 10.10, we're going to sign this operating agreement in more than one copy. Keep one copy at the house, keep one at the office in case one or the other gets destroyed, you've still got one. 10.11 is the company agrees to be bound. That sounds kind of stupid. Of course the company's going to be bound. However, it's critical that you actually state that in your operating agreement.